Welcome to the British Chamber of Commerce Singapore's podcast channel. We're excited to bring you season three of new episodes featuring in-depth content across Singapore, ASEAN, and the United Kingdom. We've had some extraordinary guests on our channel, including Formula One's Claire Williams.
I'm a firm believer that any great team, any successful team has a great culture flowing through it. You aren't successful if you don't. So we put a lot of work into this.
Renowned mountaineer Kenton Cool.
That 2019 there with a client, a big storm came in and literally destroyed Camp 2. And I've got some video footage of Sherpas like trying to hold on to the tent fabric as it blows away. And
the Royal Navy's Commodore Steve Morehouse, commander of the UK Carrier Strike Group.
The squadron of F-35 aircraft we have on board is a Royal Air Force squadron, and the personnel in there are drawn from both the Navy and the Air Force. So, you know, what better way of showing just the efficiency and the joined up nature that we now have?
And distinguished Sky News anchor Jeremy Thompson.
We had two little vans with satellite links, and we leapfrogged up the road to Pristina, the capital, throughout that first day, with non-stop coverage from basically inside a war zone.
We also sit down with the likes of TikTok, Twitch, and Twitter, and continue to bring you conversations around business and trade, leadership and people, sustainability, sports and arts, and much, much more. Thank you, as always, for your support, and we hope you enjoy this podcast.
Hello and welcome along to the British Chamber of Commerce Singapore podcast. We're delighted you're with us. My name's Helen Maguire and I'm the CEO and co-founder of Diversely, which is a platform that helps businesses attract more diverse talent through AI-driven tools and D&I analytics. We're bringing this podcast to you from the Diversity and Inclusion Committee at the British Chamber of Commerce, within which I play a very small part. The series looks at how D&I is being implemented in businesses within the region from a very practical perspective. My final guest for our final episode in this series is Siok Peng, partner and staunch advocate for D&I at Deloitte Singapore. Siok has been with the business for over 20 years and has both witnessed and been instrumental in many of the D&I changes within Deloitte, particularly where gender parity is concerned. She's based in Singapore and she's joining us to talk a little bit more about her role and, of course, Deloitte's commitments to D&I. Welcome, Siok Peng. Thank you for joining us.
Hello, Helen. Thank you for inviting me to your final episode of the podcast. I'll be most happy to share about Deloitte's D&I initiatives.
You are most welcome. Last but definitely not least. So I'd love to start off with just understanding a little bit more about your current role and how you came to be in that role. I realize you've been at Deloitte for some time now.
Yeah, that's right. I actually took on the Singapore talent role from my predecessor in June just last year when she moved on to a Southeast Asia talent role. And prior to my appointment as a Singapore talent partner, I was a Singapore tax and legal talent partner from 2013 to May this year. And as a tax and legal talent partner then, you know, I was involved in overseeing talent matters within the tax and legal business unit in Singapore. And I believe I was appointed as the Singapore tax and legal talent partner then because, you know, I had always been very involved in initiatives related to improving the workplace, even when I was still a manager and senior manager, because I've always been very passionate about creating a work environment where our people can thrive. So when I was asked to take on the Singapore Talent Partner role, I thought it was a really good opportunity for me to have a wider focus as the talent issues of the different business units may not be the same. And as a talent partner, it's my role to create an inclusive workplace culture and environment where our people feel respected, valued, and psychologically safe to bring their true and authentic selves to work, which we believe is very important to help them achieve their full potential.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would definitely agree with that. And if we could just take a little bit of a step back in terms of Deloitte itself. So obviously you work across a regional role. What's the kind of culture like at Deloitte for those of us who've never stepped inside an office or indeed worked for the business?
Sure. Well, in terms of culture, I would say that we have a very warm and friendly culture. We have pretty much an open door policy with an expectation that everyone will treat everyone with respect. And we recognize that everyone is different. So we have various programs and initiatives in place to ensure that we cater to the different needs of our diverse workforce so that our people are able to perform to their best potential.
And how long have the D&I initiatives been in place at Deloitte? I suppose more globally and also more specifically for your region.
Yeah, to be honest, it's quite hard to pinpoint to a specific date that we started our D&I initiatives. First of all, you know, we are a people business, so talent is our most important asset. And it's important that we attract and retain the best talent. And our talent vision is actually very simple. We want to be the employer of choice for the most sought after talent. And to achieve this, we have always been very committed to building a safe, diverse and inclusive environment where all our people, no matter their background, feel that they are respected and fit into the work environment and know that they have access to equal opportunities and support to achieve their goals. And as an organization that is part of a global network, we have been focused on, you know, D&I for a really long time, for as long as I could remember, actually. In fact, you know, taking care of each other and fostering inclusion are two of our shared values. And these two are very timeless shared values. We believe that an inclusive mindset and a diverse workforce are two of our competitive strengths. And in 2018, we sort of formalized our D&I priorities into our global D&I strategy called All In. And All In focuses on accelerating inclusion and also signifies our commitment to create an organization where everyone has equal opportunity to grow, to develop and succeed. We believe that it's not just the right thing to do, but it's also very aligned to our shared values, which I mentioned earlier. And to us, it also makes a lot of business sense because diverse ideas and experiences enable growth, and a diverse thinking team will enhance our ability to tackle our clients' most complex business problems.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, if you're not reflective of your client makeup as an organization, I'm sure it's very difficult to get an understanding of how they're thinking and what the solutions need to be.
Exactly.
And in terms of the diversity that you've managed to achieve so far, so the current picture, let's say, of your diversity, I'm not sure whether you'd be able to mention it from a global perspective, but I suppose from a regional or even a Singapore perspective, how are you doing there?
Okay, so in terms of, maybe I'll just mention about our focus, right? Mm-hmm. So one of our key thrusts of our All-In strategy is actually accelerate gender representation across the Deloitte network. Because we recognize that globally, women are still underrepresented in corporations, and the percentage of women decreases higher up the corporate hierarchy. And, you know, you would have, you know, read in the news that many organizations in Singapore today are still, you know, quite dominated by men at senior management level. And this clearly can be rather discouraging for women, right? And without sufficient females in leadership or senior management positions, younger women also lack role models to look up to. So we are very committed to accelerate the representation of women in leadership roles and equal opportunities for all gender. And, you know, we think that the business case for women in leadership is very well established, right? There has been a number of studies that support that organizations with greater numbers of women in executive leadership roles outperform those that are less diverse. And in Deloitte Singapore, I would say that, you know, the gender ratio of our graduate intakes all the way to around the managerial level are more or less equal, like 50% males and 50% females. But as we progress up to the career level, like directors and partners level, we do have more males and females, right? So this is likely due to the fact that, you know, females in our cultural setting tend to take a back seat in their careers for their families. So, you know, we do have set goals in the near term to increase the number of women in leadership roles as part of our D&I strategy, which is monitored very closely and reported to the top management. And to keep track of the progress, we have an all-in scorecard, right, populated with stretch goals to hold leaders accountable for delivering our gender and inclusion strategy.
Yeah, I was wondering, in terms of the involvement within D&I, where does that mainly sit? Would you say that comes from leadership or from HQ, or does it come from the bottom up, let's say, from the younger generation or those at management level?
Well, actually, the our own strategy is a global strategy, I would say, right, which all our member firms in Deloitte Network are required to be committed to, right? Even though, you know, the principles, priorities, and intention are the same across the global network, member firms plan our own all-in initiatives based on our local culture and customs. So we take a top-down and bottom-up approach, right, in our D&I initiatives.
Okay. And could you give me an example, let's say, of, you know, you mentioned the all-in initiative, which I'm guessing is much more of a top-down approach, but could you give me a specific example of what that looks like on the ground, or a recent example of that? And again, a recent example of a way in which you've approached this from a bottom-up level, or your employees have approached it from a bottom-up level.
Yeah, so for our top-down approach, we actually have organized the Inclusive Leadership Activation Lab for all our leaders to attend, right? Where they learn how to be more inclusive, which help to shape them into becoming an inclusive leader. And we also embed D&I in all our communications. In terms of bottom-up, we actually just recently, I think was end of last year, we actually formed the Singapore D&I working group, right, where we have representatives from each of the business unit, where they will, you know, share feedback that they receive from the ground to help us to, you know, to sort of look at whether our programs continue to be suitable for our people.
So in terms of the initiatives that you have in place, where have you seen the progress occur? Have you been able to measure that? Where's the impact happened, would you say?
Okay, I think in terms of initiatives, what we have done is we have tried to embed D&I in our talent life cycle. So we do have quite a bit of initiatives, which is what we call the gender smart programs, right? Like gender smart recruiting standards, right? Where we provide behavioral based interview trainings for our hiring managers to focus on behavioral based questions. And this has helped us to increase attraction and hiring of experienced women. Right. We also have the gender smart promotion, where we ensure consistent and fair promotions, mitigating bias. So what we do is that we actually have HR teams sitting in promotion discussions to ensure fairness. Right. For example, you know, when you have two people of the same experience, same performance rating, but just different gender, one is put up for promotion, one is not, you know, this would potentially be challenged by our HR team. Right. So and all this gender data of promotees are actually shared with both the Singapore and the C management. Right. And we also have what we call the WAVE sponsorship program, where leaders are expected to sponsor high performing women for leadership roles, provide them with development opportunities, and track the progress of women they sponsor. So over the last 2 years, we have seen an increase, right, in the number of females in our leadership roles. So these are some of the programs that we have had. And I would say that in terms of, you know, how we measure it, you know, we do have annual talent experience surveys that we conduct, and we have seen quite a bit of improvements in these surveys that we conducted last year and this year, especially on questions around whether our people feel that they are treated with respect at work, whether they can openly be themselves in the workplace without fear of judgment or isolation from others, and whether the leadership team demonstrates inclusive behavior. We've also scored actually very high in another survey conducted this year on the question around whether our people feel they are treated fairly regardless of their age, gender, race, and sexual orientation. In fact, our people have also, you know, provided feedback that they appreciate the various work option schemes that we offer. Right? In our office, we do have what we call a work-life integration program, right? Like flexi leave, flexi hours, flexi work, where, you know, our people could work from home. We already had this in place actually even pre-COVID, right? And people are also allowed to, you know, have a reduced portfolio. Right. So all the schemes that we have actually help our people to manage their time and personal interests with work deliverables. So these are some of the schemes that we have.
That's fantastic. And I think, you know, you're approaching it really in three ways, I suppose. Improving the diversity of your candidate pipeline through those bias-free approaches that you mentioned. And then ensuring that inclusion is at the core of what you do, and then putting in policies to, you know, retain women, essentially, to help them stay within the workforce.
That's right.
And you mentioned a little bit there around other elements of diversity. Obviously, gender is only one specific element and an area that you're very focused on, but also around age and sexual orientation. Where do you focus there, and what are some of the policies in place?
Well, in fact, I will mention that for OIN strategy, the gender balance is just one of the three pillars, right? So there are two other pillars in our OIN strategy. So the second pillar is on mental health, right? And the third is on the LGBTQ plus, right? So maybe I just mention a bit on these two, mm-hmm. right? On the second pillar, on the relating to the mental health, Deloitte is actually one of the founding partners of the global business collaboration for better workplace mental health, right? Where we'll be working together with our fellow founding partners to hold regional events and activities with the aim of a better workplace mental health on a global basis, right? Because we believe that supporting mental health is also a critical element of inclusion, right? And we need to collectively work together to address the stigma that still too often exists within our societies on this issue. You know, here in Asia, you know, issues around mental health are usually not publicly talked about, right, as we know, as there's still stigma. But because of COVID-19, these issues have come to the fore. So last year, we started putting in place various resources that our people can leverage on, right, should they need support. Example is that, you know, we launched a C employee assistance program last year, where our people have complimentary access to qualified counselors and work-life consultants. So this is actually a confidential service that is made available 24/7 to all our employees, our partners, and their immediate family members. Quite recently, we also developed awareness and education sessions for our leaders as part of our efforts in reducing the stigma of mental health, while also providing resources and support to employees in identifying and evaluating causes of mental health. In fact, we just, you know, recently completed the awareness session for some of the business units just last week, right? We did one for tax and legal. And we are also planning a half-day workshop for leaders to be trained on how to identify early signs of mental health issues, you know, and know what to do, right, when they identify those issues among the employees, right. I would say that, you know, our mental health programs and interventions are currently not as mature as those in the West, right, but there's an urgent need to increasingly create a safe space for people to recognize when their mental health is in jeopardy and take early action to care for themselves. And the third pillar I mentioned is on, you know, LGBTQ plus, right? That is also, you know, one of the area that we provide support because, you know, as I mentioned earlier, we're an organization that strives on different perspectives, ideas, and experience of our diverse workforce. And in fact, you know, these are our greatest competitive strengths. But, you know, obviously we know that this can be quite a sensitive issue in Southeast Asia. So we have adopted the embassy model, right, where our LGBTQ plus colleagues are able to be the authentic selves within the walls of Deloitte, right, regardless of the legal landscape in the country that they work in. And to better support them, right, within Deloitte, we implemented the C Standout, right, which is a network of employees from the LGBTQ plus community and allies. Just quite recently, in fact, I think about 1 or 2 weeks ago, we sent out a communication to request volunteers from our LGBTQ plus colleagues among us to join a focus group discussion, you know, to help us get a better idea of how inclusive our workplaces are for members of the LGBTQ plus community, to help us learn about the challenges our LGBTQ plus colleagues face, and how we can support them, and also to gather ideas from the community on how we can make our workplace more inclusive and diverse and build safe spaces for LGBTQ plus colleagues.
Absolutely. And do you have any feedback yet from those focus groups? Is there anything that's come up that's of interest?
Not yet, because the focus group discussions hasn't taken place yet. So at the moment, we're just still asking for volunteers.
Okay. And in terms of the big wins, let's say, for the business, where would you say they lie in the last 2 to 3 years since you've put these strategies and policies in place? Is there anything that you're particularly proud of or that stands out?
In terms of big wins, I would say that we have actually received industry awards, right, for our D&I initiatives, right? The first being the HR Excellence Awards 2015, right, where we won the Silver Award for Excellence in Employee Diversity and Inclusion Strategies. And then in 2016, we also won the Asia Recruitment Awards, where we won the Gold Award for Best Diversity and Inclusion Strategy. I think these are, you know, great testaments of our efforts in D&I. And in the more recent years, as I mentioned, you know, we have seen quite a great improvement in our talent experience survey on questions relating to D&I.
That's excellent. Congratulations. That must have been a very proud moment for you and the team.
Thank you.
And I suppose looking forward now, what are your current goals and targets for D&I? Do you have any measurements in place? And how do you see these being achieved over the next year, 2, 3, 4, 5 years?
Okay, so we, while working towards gender balance, we see the need to accelerate, you know, the rate we advance women in leadership, as I mentioned earlier. So we do have a set goal at the Southeast Asia level, right, to increase the number of female partners by a set percentage end of 2025, right, so which is in 4 years' time. So these goals are then, you know, cascaded down to each Southeast Asia country and business units. But the individual goals of each business unit actually may be different, right, depending on the nature of their business. And some business units are actually more gender diverse than others at the moment. Just like, you know, the business unit where I'm from, Tax and Legal, I would say we tend to be more balanced compared to the other business units. You know, some business units like maybe those in IT audit or cyber security, right? Those STEM subjects, they tend to have more males and females. So, you know, they would have a different target from the other business units.
Makes absolute sense. And I'm guessing also from a geographical perspective, it will differ. The maturity of D&I geographically is notoriously different. So does that differ within the business as well?
Yeah, definitely, right. So as I mentioned, even though this all-in D&I strategy is a global strategy, which all our member firms in the Deloitte network are required to commit to, you know, obviously the goals that would be different, right, for each geography, depending on the local culture and customs, right? For example, in Asia, you know, the culture remains sort of like a barrier that hinders women from rising to key leadership positions, right? There's still an expectation for men to be the main breadwinners and women to be more heavily involved in caring for the family, especially after they have kids, right? So we need to understand the barriers and the expectations of women in an Asian culture and manage these expectations by supporting women and their families. So that's why, you know, we have quite a comprehensive program here in Deloitte Singapore that not only develops women to become high performers and leaders, but also support them, support the women and their families so that they can continue working and progressing in their careers.
Excellent. And I suppose just a kind of personal question, really, is there, you know, for the business or for yourself, is there a personal reason behind why you're so passionate about D&I and improving the prospects for women, let's say, in the business?
Well, obviously, because I'm a woman myself, right? And I do also recognize that there's still an underrepresentation of women in leadership roles. So I do see an urgent need to do something about it. Personally, I feel that there's still you know, a bit of unconscious bias and stereotype gender roles, right, which limit the opportunities and choices for women. But in fact, in the International Women's Day that we had in March, we actually invited Eunice Olsen, our ex Miss Singapore Universe, to, you know, to do a sharing on unconscious bias, right? You know, I think there's still quite a bit of gender biasness, right, which are unconscious, right? And they're often sort of reinforced from a very young age, right? Where from young girls are taught to behave in a certain way, right? I mean, as a woman, you would know as well, right? And because of all the social norms, I think we women may also have the same unconscious bias about ourselves, right? And other women, and possibly the reasons that are holding us back, right, from reaching the top sometimes. You know, because sometimes, you know, we assume that we need to take on more masculine characteristics, right, to succeed, right, and also doubting our own abilities and our strengths, right. Yeah, so that's why I personally am quite passionate about this topic.
Well, it sounds like you've personally managed to overcome, and I'm sure are continuing to overcome many of those barriers. So congratulations on everything you've achieved. And I just wanted to take a kind of step back on a broader lens perspective in terms of your sector and industry. Where do you see that going, and where do you see the big wins being made, or indeed losses?
Okay, in terms of, you know, how we're doing in the business sector, I would say that, you know, we have come a long way, right? But there's still more to be done. You probably know that the professional services sector is traditionally dominated by men, right? But this is changing with people becoming more aware of issues around, you know, bias through social media and exposure to different discourses, and eventually demanding a more deliberate approach to inclusivity, right? So maybe I'll just give you an example. From a recent report released this year by ACCA, the Association of Chartered Certified Accountants. In that report, it was found that half of Singapore-based employees believe the sector has a diversity issue, right, that needs to be addressed. And over 70% of workers said more should be done to promote D&I in the profession. And meanwhile, those who are keen to effect change were not sure where to start, right? And when asked if they knew what could be done to promote D&I at work, almost 3 in 5 employees said they are only partially sure or have no clue what steps to take, right? And on top of that, about 60% of professionals were doubtful about their ability to help improve the situation at work, right? But on a more positive note, employees believe that, you know, having an effective D&I strategy was crucial for the business bottom line, and close to 3 in 4 professionals said they saw a strong link between workplace policies and organizational success, right? Mm-hmm. Where 80% were certain that policy can enable a variety of perspectives, right? 41% believe that it will lead to better decision making, and 38% believe it will increase employee engagement. So hopefully, you know, we will start to see more changes in our business sector and industry.
Yeah, certainly sounds like there's a little bit of work to be done there, particularly on the confidence angle around D&I. But it's great to hear all of the strategies and policies and successes that you guys have had at Deloitte so far. So long may that continue. And a final question, for those businesses out there in your sector or indeed outside of it, that are looking to get started and perhaps don't know where to start, what would be your one piece of advice for them?
I think a good way to start is to look at how, you know, D&I can be embedded in the talent life cycle, right? Like, for example, from talent attraction, you know, companies can look into having scholarships, right, for females, undergraduates, and have undergraduate mentoring programs like we do, right? We actually work with the universities, right, to mentor females by our female senior leaders. Right. And also ensuring that the company has diverse role models in their recruitment drives. Right. So when you send your people down for recruitment drives, make sure that you have gender diversity. And then, you know, in terms of recruitment, I mentioned earlier, you know, perhaps having behavioral based interview trainings for recruiting managers to mitigate biases. Right. And then onboarding, you know, look into integrate culture of inclusion in onboarding experience. And then also in terms of learning and development, you know, providing adequate resources and training on D&I, right? How to discuss D&I issues with both internal and external parties, right? On this, actually, for us of Deloitte Global, we have actually launched the D&I hub, right, where we can find various resources there and also a D&I channel on our learning platform, right? And then in terms of talent management and engagement, you know, we can look into accelerating female talent development through coaching and sponsorship, right? Some programs which I mentioned earlier, and also having programs, right, that promote work-life integration, providing equal opportunity to women. And then communication will be important by embedding D&I in leadership communication, having female role models sharing their journey. And then when it comes to recognition and rewards management, obviously, you know, ensuring that gender ensuring gender equity, both in terms of pay and promotion. And finally, on exit, right, having exit interviews to capture reasons for leaving, right? And I think it's also important to hold executive leaders accountable for driving D&I outcomes, right? If, you know, by just having all these initiatives without any accountability by executive leaders, I don't think it's going to work, right, to drive the D&I strategy. And I think it's also important to, you know, give each leader two sets of D&I, you know, that they need to achieve, right, in terms of one, diversity results, right, that focus on representation, right, but in terms of hiring, promotion and mobility outcomes, and two, inclusion results that focus on day-to-day experience, such as employee engagement, equity and psychological safety outcomes. Obviously, you know, we'll be able to measure this, right, because the first on diversity results, you know, this can be based on hard data, right, based on the gender ratio in terms of the hiring, the promotion and the mobility. And then the next on the inclusion outcomes, this will probably, you know, we will be able to measure this through the employee experience surveys.
Fantastic, thank you. That's certainly a lot to take in. So I'm sure people will be rewinding that bit and taking some notes and listening back to all of your tips and advice. So thank you so much, Jiaopeng. I think we've all learned a lot from that run through, and certainly about how Deloitte is tackling and has been and will continue to tackle D&I within the business. So thank you so much for all your insights and expertise.
Thank you, Helen.
And that's a wrap for our series. Thank you so much to Deloitte, to Shell, to the British Council, and to Barclays for appearing on this D&I series as part of the British Chamber Singapore podcasts. We've learned a lot. They've shared their experiences, their knowledge, and their insights on D&I within their businesses. And of course, you can catch any of those podcasts in the usual places that you might find your podcasts if you've missed any of those episodes. And please do check out diversity.io as well for more tips, advice, and a podcast coming up. I'll catch you soon.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of the British Chambers podcast. Before you go, don't forget to subscribe, and why not leave us a rating and review on Spotify, Apple, Google, and the other podcast platforms. For more information, please visit our website at www.britcham.org.sg and tune in next time for a brand new episode.